All right, ladies, let's be real. Who here actually enjoys shaving their legs? Not me, that is for sure. So get this, Nair. Yes, Nair, the OG, has leveled up. They've got these new sensational shower creams and body creams that smell amazing. I just used the coconut oil and vitamin E shower cream, and I seriously forgot I was in my own bathroom. It smelled like a spa. Plus, it's allergen-free, so it's gentle for your skin, and it worked in as little as 3 minutes, so no nicks, no cuts, and the smooth skin lasted days longer than shaving. Nair's new sensational shower and body creams are free of all those nasty chemicals like phthalates and sulfates, so you can feel good about what you're putting on your skin. Have a me-time moment with Nair, the number one hair removal brand. Smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
And that's what you really missed with Jenna
and Kevin, an iHeartRadio podcast. And welcome back to And That's What You Really Missed, part two with the one and only Ryan Murphy. We know we left you on a cliffhanger last week when Ryan dropped that little nugget that when they created Will Schuster, they apparently were interested in Justin Timberlake playing the part. So why don't we...
We got to go back, yeah. Right? We got to go back and check out what he has to say.
Let's dive deep on that one.
I don't even think Justin Timberlake knows this, but there was like a 1 week window and talking to his people where I thought maybe he was interested, but maybe that meant we interested in having a script dropped off at his front door. I don't remember. Right, I wasn't as facile at the star casting back then, but that was our idea for Mr. Shoe was Justin Timberlake. Yeah. And then it was very quickly like, yeah, Justin is booked for tours through 2013 or something. It's like, okay, no Justin Timberlake. So when that happened, I was like, well, let's just find everyone. And the only person that we just straight out offered it to was we kept talking about a Jane Lynch type. And finally I was like, let's just offer it to Jane. She's probably going to say no. But to my shock and thrill, she said yes instantly. So she was the only real name. Mm. And then we just had this a magical period where for 6 months we went all around the country, and anybody who wanted to audition could send in tapes, and we looked at everybody and everything, and you know, and then had narrowed it down to, for each of the parts, three roles. And then we brought all of those actors, and I believe there were 50 actors in total, were brought to LA. And you guys remember walking into these hideous, fluorescently lit rooms with like all of these people that you staring at you with notepads, with pens ready to judge
gray
you.
Gray suits. Yep.
It was the most like cliche when Hollywood we're going to go see the suits. It was they were actually all in black suits, sitting in this tiered room, staring at you with no expression.
And I had no power back then. Like I really was just like a voice in the wilderness. But there was a moment in the casting of that show where I kind of would be the first person to speak. I would make sure, like, I would talk first. And in both of your cases, I remember saying, it's Jenna or I don't want to do it. Or it's Kevin, it's Kevin or I can't go on. I would say something like that because what are they going to say? And, you know, there were other people who were considered for your parts.
Yes.
And I don't really like to talk about that. But many of them I've worked with, you know.
Yeah.
The weird thing about it is, like, you meet the people. When you get to that far in a casting process, people don't know, like, you meet the person that you're up against.
You're sitting in the room with them.
Unless,
yes,
you're,
and
unless you're Chris Colfer and you're against yourself. Like, you meet who you're
Yes,
going,
that was
know.
Written for him wow. based on his – he did a tremendous audition.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. Like, I do remember that I would be not telling the truth if I didn't tell you. Like, you know, when I was working with Johnny Groff and Pretty Handsome, that's when I first met Leah. Mm-hmm. And so Jonathan and I were filming Pretty Handsome, and Leah came out to visit Jonathan. And, you know, that was also a period in time where the ideal look were people who were on, like, you know, quote unquote look, were on CW shows.
Totally.
You know? And I remember Leah saying, like, oh my God, I can't even get an audition on a goddamn CW show. Like, it's really going to be hard for
Same.
Me because, you know?
Yeah.
So I remember thinking, like, oh, she'd be a really good Rachel. And I in the writing, I think we would all start to, I don't think Brad and Ian knew Leah then, but I would kind of write in things that Leah and I had spoken about. So she kind of always was the front runner for that part. Mm-hmm. Like, I, you know, I do remember her auditioning and me sneaking her sides, I think, really early. So she was very familiar with what she was doing. And Kevin Riley saying, well, thank God we found that actress because it almost looks like it was written for her. And I was like, dun, 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 kind of was. But it was really, really, really fun to do the casting of that part and for all of your parts. And I was directing it too. So
right.
I kind of was thinking, like, well, you know, and I had worked with Amber. Mm-hmm. Amber was, little baby Amber came in and was on my Delta Burke failed pilot, another thing. And I always say that from every tragedy comes rebirth. But I never forgot Amber and how great she was. And I think we kind of thought of Mercedes for Amber, to be quite honest, but there were other contenders, but just, you know. But it was also like one of those things that once you guys got into the room and read, and you don't know this as actors because, again, no one ever tells you, and sits you down and looks you in the eye and say, you know what? You were phenomenal. That was the best moment, I think, in many of your auditioning lives, because you just walked in and you nailed it. And also, even if you didn't kind of get some things right, it was sort of like, well, that's the person I want to hang out with. That's
right.
The essence of that character.
Yeah.
The spirit of who you all were as young people was the thing that I'm like, well, I want to showcase that.
Yes.
I want to showcase. And of course, you know, the great irony, Kevin, is you were the big dancer in the cast and we put you in a wheelchair. So,
well, if the show was made today, you couldn't cast me anyway.
No, we couldn't. And that's another interesting thing to think about
yeah.
and
yeah.
that I talk about. Like, that would not have happened. There were many things that would not have happened. But it was a really magical, protected experience that was about talent and the love of talent and the love of actors. And wow. And also, like, you guys had to read two scenes and sing a song, as I recall.
Yes.
And Kevin, I recall that your song was Let It Be. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
And so you and I used to have that joke where I'd just be like, Kevin, just let it be, babe.
You just walk up out of nowhere and I'd be like, this bitch.
Let it be, Kevin. But you were just so, but also what was so cute is everybody was really nervous and it was hard.
Oh,
and,
yes.
I would.
And what was it like when you guys...
Oh, God.
Got the call. Who called you guys?
Did
I call you?
No.
No, it was my agent.
My manager called me. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I wasn't allowed to because that was corporate policy where the casting person had to call
that's
the agent.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
So
you remember.
You came in. Are you going to tell the story, Kevin? Go for it.
Yeah. Well, you came in. So I had already been in 2 days before for, was it Network? What was first?
Studio was first. Network
studio.
Was
so I did Studio. And then by Network, you had flown all the people in from New York that we were testing with or against. Right. Mm. And then that's when Jenna was there. I had already met Chris. Mm. And you stuck your head in the room. And I had never tested for anything. And I was shocked I had made it to the fourth audition. And I have terrible nerves, for especially when auditioning.
Me too.
And you stuck your head in the room. And you go, "Hi, everyone." And you're like, "Hi." And you're like,
Are you nervous?
Don't be nervous. We're more nervous than you are. And I remember you shut the door, and it was sort of like popping an inflated balloon, because you released like the tension, and we all started laughing. You're like, "He's nervous." Yeah. Like, are you kidding me? Like, we have no. His show's getting made, but it was. I was like, "That's so nice of him to come in here and acknowledge that." Like, they also have to pick someone, and they're also nervous about finding the right people.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, we have a 50-50 shot here, everyone. Like, just, you know.
I kind of instinctively knew, like, maybe in the back of my lizard brain, like, this was my chance. This show was my shot. Mm-hmm. And I've never prepared or worked harder than anything than in the preparation of directing that pilot. Wow. Like, I
mean, the pilot's phenomenal.
I watched it yesterday. It is. It still holds up.
It's very good.
From every detail, I mean, it's like you're just so detail-oriented.
I worked hard. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I loved making it, and it was like,
yeah,
it was such a wonderful experience. We made it in the fall. It was beautiful weather. I think, you know, I remember shooting on Halloween right around Matt Morrison's birthday.
That's right. That was one of our last day.
That was the end. And
yeah, that's right.
It was just so fun. I remember, and I was, you know, it was in my head, and nobody had ever directed in our world or made a musical. Right. So the Andrew Mitchell and I, and Chris Baffa, who was our DP, like, we were trying to figure out what is the language of making a musical? And like, I had a very strong sense of what I wanted to do, but it was just joy. It was really fun. And then Jenny, you had asked me about the casting of the other,
yes,
you know, the guest star cast. Like, I'm trying to even think how that started. Who was our first celebrity? Kristen. Chenoweth. That was written for her. Mm. I loved her.
I mean, everybody from like Stamos, you know, who we loved, to, I mean,
Gwyneth. And
I would imagine that a lot of people were like, hey, like, by the time the show had kind of taken off, people were like, "Ryan, please put me in this show."
Yeah. Yeah, I got a lot of phone calls, and you know, oh, this is another hot piece of dish. That's really good. And I've never talked about this. Okay, so do you remember that the role that Eve played?
Yes.
I love Eve. Almost Whitney Houston had agreed to play that part.
Oh.
What?
So yeah, I've given you some Justin Timberlake tea. Again, I don't know if Justin Timberlake ever knew about that, but Whitney Houston, that actually made it pretty far down the line.
Wow.
And I had a phone call with Whitney about that part.
You talked to Whitney about it?
Yes.
Oh my God.
And
explain.
What was that conversation like? Lovely and charming and sweet.
Oh.
And I don't think she was in the right place and time to do it, is all I'll say. But
yeah.
Wow.
I remember even with her agent at the time, like, she just loved that it was about kids in choir, and she was like, "This is phenomenal, like, that you're doing a show about show choirs." And, you know, she was in a choir, Whitney. Mm. And I just said, "I think you as a teacher would be a great kind of thing for you to play." And she said, "I agree." And then we talked about, I don't know, it was just, but she didn't end up doing it, and Eve was phenomenal. But
she was.
I was very starstruck by Eve.
Eve was fierce. But I think at the moment that I got close to Whitney Houston, I was like, well, there's people that we can put in here. And then, you know,
right.
I spent years trying to write a role for Jennifer Lopez, who's a friend. I could never figure out the right part, and her schedule was. And Anne Hathaway, like, there were always people who wanted to do it, but we could never figure out the timing.
Wow.
That I called the one that got away. But they were lovely and great.
After Eat, Pray, Love, like, Javier Bardem said he wanted to be on it, and I was like, please, can you please?
All of them.
Yeah, but everybody, like, there was a moment in time where
Because people wanted to come and show off. Like, normally you see actors and they're just acting.
Well, and they're
a
like,
lot of
I
them
sing.
Can sing.
Right. I mean, yeah. Kate Hudson and Sarah
Kate
Jessica
Hudson.
Parker. Like, all of them. They're incredible.
Yes, and I would also like to, speaking of Sarah Jessica, do you know that I've gotten death threats about the Turkey Lurkey number? I would just like to say that I don't care.
No, it's,
and
it's
I
not funny,
love that. I love Let's Have a Kiki Turkey Lurkey, one of my faves, and I did
Brilliant.
Not deserve the death threats.
You did
I had
not.
A friend last night randomly text me about that number in particular.
Turkey Lurkey.
And said,
time.
Do you remember this number? And I was like, yes. He's like, I was walking my son with my husband. And I thought it was a dream I had, and I had to go. When I played it for my toddler, and he was like, "Huh?"
I stand by it. But the thing about that was, you know, again, it was a moment in time where you could turn on television, and there was Adele on Entertainment at Night talking about
right.
the Glee episode. Like, it was just something that people loved and wanted to be a part of it, and
right.
Wanted to. Like, I can sing. We all, like, it was fun. Sometimes I would do it. Sometimes I would search for, you know, and I could, like, with Anne, I could never, the mm-hmm. timing was off. And with Jennifer, yeah. we could never find the right part. But it was always, but it meant a lot that people at that level would reach out and say, we see what you're doing and we love what it's about and it's cool. And God, you know, what I wouldn't have killed to have been a kid and been able to see something like that on the air. That
right.
was always the running thing. Like, mm-hmm. I wish this had been on the air when I was a kid. And
right.
I felt
right.
that too.
Right, right, right.
And that was the reason why, you know, but for a while there, I did have a really lucky golden Rolodex. I really did.
You
and
did.
It was fun.
Special for us too. We got to meet all these really awesome people who came
oh
in
God.
And were like, I'm a fan of you. And you're like, wait a sec, you're a fan of the show first. But like, also
yeah.
that's really, that means a
and
lot,
I,
you know?
And I got to have moments that remain with me. Like, when I was growing up, one of my idols was Carol Burnett. And that
oh.
show aired at 10 o'clock, and my father used to get so mad that I would sneak out of bed and watch it. And I get to have a moment with Carol Burnett on the set of Glee where I got to hold her hand and say, when I was a child, I felt completely like an alien, and you made me laugh, and I recognized in you some energy that I wanted to have. And then, of course, I broke down and she rubbed my back. But I got to have moments like
mm-hmm.
that with people that I grew up loving. And
yeah.
yes.
and I got to say, like, you know, Burt Bacharach.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, I got to say, thank you.
Wow.
You meant something to me. You influenced my life and other people's lives. And, you know, the moving thing about that is 9 out of 10 times, those icons would say, wow, really? They have no idea how people feel about mm-hmm. them because mm-hmm. people are too shy
yes.
in expressing love and expressing, you meant this to me, you know? So I got to have those moments, as I'm sure you guys did.
Oh, yeah.
You
oh,
know,
my God.
So many of them with so many great icons. You know, Stevie was one, and that
yes.
started a relationship with me and her, and that continues to this day. I was lucky, and I'm very humbled by it. And I think now, like, what if Glee were on the air? Like, who would you guys like to put on? Was
oh
it, do you have a
gosh.
Bucket list?
Oh my God!
Still Beyonce.
Well, Beyonce, yes, obviously.
I know you guys were always mad that I never did a Beyonce tribute episode.
I feel like we, Lizzo would have been like the newer. Like also,
yeah.
we would have done
and
a
Lizzo,
lot of Lizzo songs, right?
Zendaya, mm-hmm. Zendaya would be great to guest star.
Oh yes,
she would be good. Oh, you know, yeah. like my only regret—I only have one regret musically, which I wish I probably wouldn't have done it then, but like I really wanted to do a Taylor Swift tribute episode.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of tried. A little bit. We certainly did Taylor songs, but I think she's so amazing, and those songs would have worked so well on Glee. Taylor Swift was kind of the one that got away, but
yeah.
God, there's so many Beyonce. I wish we could have figured out, but
Beyonce's hard though. Like that was like doing the Michael episode where it's like, who can sing all these songs?
Right.
The Michael episode, which almost killed us.
that's what tore us apart.
That was
episode.
The worst shoot of all time because it was so long. It was so hard.
Oh, God. I just remember that I was so paranoid about, like, because I was obsessed with Michael. And you were like, okay, you can come in and pitch us songs.
Yeah, tell me what you want. Right.
Yeah, I was like, what?
Michael was like, my breaking point. I wasn't in the Michael episode.
Oh, that's right. You got fired.
I got fired for an episode. No,
did you really?
I didn't get fired for an episode.
You got suspended.
I was told to go take a vacation.
Yeah.
It was, yes. And honestly, we've never talked about this, but it was like my mental, my mental health episode.
Was that right after you did the video with Gaga?
Yeah, I think when was that? It was right around that time, Kevin. Yes,
yes,
that's
it
right.
Was.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
When Gaga called you, Ryan, to ask if Jenna could do the video.
Yes, when Gaga called and said, hi, you need to release Jenna for 3 weeks, something like that. I'm like, I'll do anything you say.
It was like two nights she got me out, but
yeah,
yes,
it was nothing. But yeah, you know what?
Bye, Michael.
I think that, yeah, you look back on those moments, right, that we all had, and they seemed so overblown.
Yes.
And
Michael was a big one.
You know, and of course now, Jenna, if you had said, you know what, I'm a young person who is not loving or adjusting well to the schedule, to the limelight, to trying to figure out who I am as a person, I need a minute.
Yeah.
That would have been, it would have been like, you know what, Jenna, here is two tickets to Hawaii paid for by the corporation, and please do it.
Go take
but
care
back
of
then
yourself.
There was no language or
no,
so
there was
it
was no
like
vocabulary
just
for
it was just you know, keep it down, and then you explode and everybody says, what's wrong with you, you know, what's going on, versus,
and me as like your roommate at the time, I think I also didn't even recognize what was going on, cuz I was still tired and just going to work, and like, to me, it was surprising, too.
Yeah.
Because you just didn't know to look for these things. Like, oh, we're all doing the same thing. We're fine. If I'm fine, she's fine.
Well, and then, you have, like, these crazy episodes with these massive things that the press is talking about. And, you know, you're going, all of these, like, social pressures are now, like, pushing down on you externally, that you're, like, you don't even have the time or energy to actually look inward and say, like, I need a second, right? It's just you act out or you explode or whatever it is, and you know, you're an emotional mess and you don't know how to quite regulate what you're feeling or you know, tell anybody what's going on.
Yeah, and I think the other thing at the time was there was just, like I said, but there was no corporate language.
Right.
Like
right.
You are an employee and you signed a contract and we're shooting, and what do you mean you don't feel like going in, which is going to require a rewrite. But it was just a different time, and I don't think that anybody knew the vernacular about, but I'm glad that you got that time. And I don't, you know, it's all a blur. Like I just remember, like, I don't really want to do a Super Bowl episode. I really don't want to, because it's like, why are people who watch the Super Bowl are not going to watch Glee, and we're just going to get attacked and picked on. And
it took a month. Never ended.
It took a month to shoot that episode.
It did, and there was great things that came out of it.
Yes.
Like there are moments that remain indelible, but it was a lot of pressure, and
that's when I had bronchitis and the flu.
Well, we kept getting canceled. The night shoots for Thriller kept getting canceled because everybody kept getting strep or passing it around, and we'd have to cancel the night shoot if somebody couldn't show up.
Yeah, they were, and the Michael Jackson estate was very, very particular about, you know, how we were going to, you know, when I suggested we were going to mash up Thriller with Heads Will Roll, it was hours of conversations, and they didn't, like, it was just a lot. And I do rethink that probably was the apex of, we were all like, you know what, this has got to calm down now, because this cannot sustain.
It felt like
that's
that.
Right.
It physically felt like that.
This is too much. And was that season 3?
Yes.
Two. Oh. I think it was 2.
Michael Jackson, I don't think, was 2.
No, was 3, but Super Bowl was 2.
Super Bowl was 2.
Okay.
Sorry. Super
Wait,
was 2.
What was our Super Bowl episode?
So that
we
was Thriller, Heads Would Roll, and then Michael
okay,
was
right.
Separate.
Okay, that's why I'm confused.
Yes.
See, it's a blur.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
22 episodes, like it all is just a blur, but
it does.
It was at that end of season 2. I'll never forget it. It was at the end of season 1. It was like, yay, we get to go on a tour to a mall. What do you, Radio City, yay. Yes, yes. Oh my God, look, there's a t-shirt. And then at the end of season 2, what?
Kill me.
No, we don't want to do that.
Didn't we call you into like our rehearsal room to like have a talk with you? To like, I don't think we can do this.
Yes
you did.
Yes.
There were many moments like that. There was a moment where we're like, we can't do this. And I'm like, well, I I don't know what to do. Like, right. I'm an employee too here. But I will say that our bosses had, they really, they were great and they had great compassion. And it was one of those things where this had never happened before. Mm-hmm. So there was no roadmap for any of us in any way to understand anything that we were doing.
Right.
It was sort of like, you know, stumbling towards the next.
And there's this like dichotomy of like, we don't want to say no. They don't want to say no.
I want
to
be
nobody
a good
knows
boy.
How to kind of say like, I'm at my rope's end. And like, we just don't know how to, we didn't know how to do that. There was no roadmap for it. And so
I look back at it now and it's like, okay, so you have these group of actors who've given you 10 months of their year to shoot 22 episodes. And now you want them to go on a musical tour.
I wish I could have gone to tour with fresh eyes, because going stepping into any arena now to see an artist perform, you're like, God, they're so lucky. This is so cool. And I say that to Kevin every time. I'm like, I wish I appreciated tour more.
But how could you? You were like, you know, we were all kind of being just, it was
a
nutty time.
We had 3 days off in between wrapping the season before we went to Vegas to start
Vegas.
Arena tour.
Fond memories.
Well, how were those 3 days? Because I didn't have 3 days off. Did you enjoy them? Was it fun? Try writing 22 episodes. Kevin.
We slept.
I was the one that enjoyed the tour the most. I had a great time.
He did.
It was all of my dreams come true. Oh, yeah. We got to London and the girls disappeared. They all just fell off the face. They were crying in their room. And I remember putting my arm around.
Why were you crying?
We all had lost it. We had lost it. We were exhausted. Everybody wanted to go home and see their family.
We had sold out 7 shows in a row at the O2 in London.
So cool.
And walking up to the stage to like take our places for the first show, I had my arm around Leah. I'm like, Leah, isn't this amazing? We're at the most famous arena in the entire world.
Sold out.
And we're going to do 7 sold out shows. And I was genuine. Like, that was my dream. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I just want to see my family. I'm like, okay.
We were tired.
Well, you know, youth is wasted on the young. And that is very true.
It's so true.
Like, but I understood it. I understood. Like, people didn't have the same dreams I had. Like, I wanted to be a musician, a pop star. And this was the only way I was going to get to be able to do it.
Jenna, the weather is finally getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees.
Yes, it is, and I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. And luckily, I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. Like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more.
And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices in premium fabrics and finishes. We love that.
I just got the silk skirt, and then I also got the 100% organic cotton striped sweater. It's great quality for that price. I literally shop here all the time now because it is just undeniable.
Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/really for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/really to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/really. Let's talk about something we can all relate to. Hair removal. Not exactly the highlight of our day, right? Between Nick's cuts and razor burn, the worst. But guess what? Nair, the OG, has taken hair removal to the next level with their new sensational shower and body creams that smell amazing. Literally the best thing ever. Nair's new scents have turned my bathroom into a spa. My favorite is the soothing aloe and water lily body cream. It smells so good. Plus, it's designed for lingering freshness, so I smell and feel good for the rest of the day. And who doesn't love that? Nair's new shower and body creams are super easy to apply and work in as little as 3 minutes, and my smooth skin lasts days longer than shaving. You can use it on your legs, arms, underarms, even your bikini area, which is perfect with summer right around the corner. I just went on a trip to New York to visit my family, and I used Nair before I left. I didn't even need to pack a razor because I knew my legs would be smooth the entire trip. So check out the new and improved body creams and shower creams from Nair, the number one hair removal brand. So smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ryan, you said you wanted to be editor-in-chief of Vogue growing up, but, like, your fashions have always been very iconic, if you will. And talk about, like, your love for costumes and the details of, like, all of that going into the pilot and the show, because it was so specific
meticulous.
And also so telling of our characters.
That's it. Yeah, I was just talking to somebody about that. You know, the thing that I love the most in my life is creating a world and then entering into it. And that was always evidenced by my childhood. You know, I grew up in Indiana. Literally in the backyard was a cornfield and a church. And I would be reading articles in the local paper, the Liz Smith column about Studio 54, and I couldn't go there. So I turned my bedroom into Studio 54. I found reference photos, and I made a disco ball, and I made my room look like I made my room look like Studio 54. Then, for example, when Grace Kelly died, I took a photograph of Grace Kelly to the local hardware store and said, "See the color of her eyes? I want to paint my room the color of Grace Kelly's eyes. Can you make me this color?" And they were like, "What?" But they did.
Wow.
So I always did that. And that was a way to escape my pain, I think, you know, a tortured, picked on little gay kid. So once I started to do things in Hollywood and I started off writing movies and none of them got made, and then I did a television show and I instantly loved it because I'm like, oh, I can make a world. I can create something that is in my head and other people can kind of have a portal to do it. So everything that I do, you know, I spend a lot of time on the costumes, on the sets, on the colors. And when I was doing Glee specifically, I thought it had to be so bright and poppy and inviting, from the sets to the costumes to the way it was lit, because maybe people wouldn't hang around in a musical number, but they would if it was like a candy box. So it was always that level of detail. And, you know, I do have really bad OCD. I've been treated for it. I've been on medication for it. And it does not go away no matter what I do. It becomes less as I get older. But it becomes a way to put my anxiety. So one of the things about my life that I love is that I will stay up until 2 a.m. researching and referencing different patterns and colors. Like, I'm working on a thing right now about Truman Capote, and I'm doing that. Like, so it's like, well, I want to go to Le Cote Basse 1975, a famous restaurant in New York. So
right.
Let me fall into that wormhole. I've loved that part of my life, but that's also been a torment for me, because anybody who has OCD knows that it's very difficult. But I think that looking back on it, it's all been a place to put my anxieties, but more than that, my hopes and optimism. But I loved that. And I spent a lot of time on all of it. Like, just, I remember painting the lockers in those hallways of Glee, the hours of research about the exact right shade. Of course, I can't remember what Michael Jackson episode it was, so that's because I'm growing old. But I did spend a lot of time and energy on it. I spent a lot of time and energy on the costumes that you guys wore. Mm-hmm. And that began the phase of my career that I call my Funko Pop doll phase.
Yes.
Where if you're going to have a character, you have to instantly think about, how do I make that character a doll so that it's instantly iconic and has its own iconography? So, you know, Tina had her own likes and dislikes. Artie had his own. Well, yes. He would never wear that. Like, it's just things that I had mood boards and all of those things. And I do think that that was a way in for many people. The clothes, the sets, the... It just was kind of a delicious world, the Glee world. It wasn't the real world. And I always say, like, I don't want to live in the world, the real world. I want to live in my world. And I get to create my world. How lucky am I to do that? Like, I have very specific rules when I create things. You know, I just did this show about Jeffrey Dahmer that's very popular. And people are kind of obsessed with why so much yellow. What's up with the yellow? And when I made that show, it was based on, I saw one picture of a hallway in Jeffrey Dahmer's apartment that had this very weird fluorescent lighting. And I kept trying to figure out, where is that color from? And I finally found that color, and it was in a urinal cake. Ooh. The exact same shade of yellow. So I kept holding up this thing saying, this is the color. And everything then bounced off that. Like, how we lit it, the clothes, what does that mean?
Got it's your it. Way into the whole
it's,
world.
It's just it. A concept. And so I'm very, those kind of things matter to me. And I'm always, you know, before I sell any show, I have learned, like, there's so much stuff that you kind of have to design the poster, and you have to design the typography on the poster. You kind of have to have a concept before you make something, because that's, you have to, or else you're going to get lost.
Right.
So all those things I spend a lot of time on. But thank you for noticing that. I mean, I never get to talk about these sort of weird things, but it is the 2 a.m. decisions, you know.
Yeah, totally. Well, I mean, I think being on sort of like the receiving end of some of those things, where anytime we'd go in with Lou, who did the costumes, and
Who's also genius.
Make an incredible team, that everything was so specific, where she knew the rules. Like, if you set up the rules of, like, this is, she
got it.
She speaks the same language. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the I old, think
yeah. It's about
like
having
her, who's an expert, could completely just play within that with each of us.
Yeah, there's, I think that, like, I think people want rules and boundaries, both as viewers and as department heads, and even as actors. Like, okay, well, this is the box that I get to be in.
Right.
Great. Like, there's a discipline to it. You know, and I don't know how you guys felt, but I think as soon as I saw you in those costumes, I was like, well, there you go. There's your character. You knew what to do. It influenced everything.
Well, there wasn't a lot about, like, Tina in the pilot, right? Like, even in my audition, you were like, can you improv a little? Can you just tell me who she is? And I had done work on the plane to LA of, like, figuring out who she was. So I walked in with, like, a very specific idea of who, you know, and her intent. But, like, with the costumes, my first fitting, I looked like Artie. And I had mom jeans and these very, like,
I remember those pictures.
Sweaters. And Lou called me and she said, so we're taking a turn. I hope we're good with this. And Ryan thinks you look too much like Artie. Let's switch it up. And I come in and I see all this chains and black. And I was
Vampire
like.
Vampire musical.
I was game. But, like, stepping into those outfits, I was like, oh, this is who she is. This makes sense to me now. And then my audition song changed right away. And, like, everything just kind of, like, clicked, you know. And that, you know, it started with the costume, you know.
Yeah, because I just remember thinking Ian was always obsessed with Tina's stutter in the pilot. And, like, that idea. And I was like, well, what is that about? Like, is that even real? I mean, could we even do that today? Could we even have done in this day and age? Could we have a character?
I don't know.
I don't know. But yeah. It just became sort of a, like, I always imagined her as someone who was shy and yet also secretly tough and had an armor, which is where that look came from. And once Lou and I remember saying, like, also, I think Jenna would look really good in a lot of purple. And yes. And that became a thing. And then, yes. Like, we just built it and it became...
Purple hair, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, you watch that pilot and you're like, well, these are all Funko dolls. Like, they just yes. are. Like, they're all, that's every right. one of you, everybody from... Jane and with the tracksuit.
Ugh, those tracksuits.
Like, yeah, who? I mean, that was your idea, the tracksuits.
Yes,
and that was it. The plan to always have her in tracksuits.
Always, like, you know, and some things were like you figure out when you're building something. Like, all the inspiration doesn't come at once, and sometimes you need to put something next to something to make a decision. But I just remember thinking that Sue Sylvester would always be ready to jog. And ready for, like, so, yeah. And I remember talking to Jane in the making of the pilot. I'm like, I think this is kind of the best role ever because you're always going to be comfortable. You're always just going to be in like a cozy tracksuit. And she was like, please.
Jealous. Oh, yeah. Me, yeah. I was in 8 layers of sweaters.
I know. You suffered.
I was in lace and buttons.
And also, you had a lot of, like, there was a lot of Bjork and yes. and mm-hmm. Tina.
Yes.
Like, that was another influence. Like, that was a thing. Like,
remember
a lot
when
of times,
we couldn't find her? We were like, we want to do the I follow yes, Rivers. And we're right. like, we can't find yeah. Bjork.
Yeah, Bjork had fallen off the face of the earth. But gladly, we found her.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a joyous process. And also, it's really fun. You know, when you guys were all playing misfits. So the idea that I always had is this is a group of people who were literally the island of lost toys. And when I was a child, that Christmas musical that had the "We're the Island of Lost Toys"
we're
number,
all misfits.
I was like, I should be on that island. And I related, and I remember all of their outfits were so singular in their looks, and I'm like, don't want to so be right. something else other, like, remember the doll with the jelly thing?
Yes.
It was all these weird things, and I never wanted them to change. I wanted them to keep their misfit chic because I thought it was so great. Don't be something else.
Right.
But it's kind of fun how we are able to do that in this business.
Well, and also the tidbit of, sorry, Kevin, the weird thing talking about this morning, like that iconic scene in the pilot of being, you know, being a part of something special makes you special. That was shot in a different costume for Rachel, right? And
right.
you were like, mm-hmm. it's not working. We can't have it like that.
No, because she looked like a flamingo dancer. Like, it was just like this weird costume. And then we looked at it and like, okay, well, this is the thesis statement
yes,
of the show.
That's right.
And she's not relatable at all. It's like people, she looks like Lola Falana.
Yes. I remember those outfits we had. It was
yeah.
crazy. Yeah.
So
yeah,
we... Yeah.
Reshot.
We reshot it. And, you know, that was also things like that I didn't know. I didn't have kids then. So that moment came from Dana Walden and Jennifer Salke seeing the rushes and saying, like, no. And also, like, what I had originally planned for Don't Stop Believin' was completely out to Mars. And it was those two women who said they should just be real people, simple girls and boys who were wearing like clothes from the Gap, relatable. That's their version of a uniform. And I was like, oh, yeah, right. Let's do that. So it was a very fluid process, the making of that pilot. And little things that we would shoot and then throw away and then reshoot. And
right.
sometimes I would sneak on the lot and do them without permission, which I would pay for later. But it was always a living, breathing organism until it wasn't. Like, I just kept working on it.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with it.
Yeah.
I mean, even as something as simple, like, you watch Don't Stop Now, and it seems so simple. Like, we rehearsed that for
weeks.
And I filled in for Corey because Corey didn't have a work visa yet.
There were like five different versions of that number that we did.
I remember you, like, Ryan would come in, you'd come in and be like, I want something Twyla.
Twyla Tharp. We were like dancing, we were like full Twyla dances.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, I want arms up. I want lots of arms up.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
you had a vision.
I did have a vision, but I also didn't. My vision was yes or no. So, like, I remember you guys.
Yes.
I do remember we worked on it a lot. And I also knew, you know, also I will tell you, no one wanted to do Don't Stop Believin'. Brad, Ian, the studio, no one wanted to do it because it had just been done on The Sopranos.
Right.
Right.
And I kept saying, I don't care. I just know it's this song because it meant something to me as a kid.
Mm.
And just the phrase, Don't Stop Believin'. And also when I was working on it, more important than the number was the look on Mr. Shu's face watching it, remembering his own dreams. And I remember we did one take and Matt just kind of started to cry. And I'm like, that's it. That's what I wanted. And he was like, no, that was a mistake. Mm. I was like, no, that's what I wanted. Like that idea of looking back at your life and thinking, I wish I had done something differently and moved towards the person that I was afraid to be.
Mm.
That's what that song was for me. So mm-hmm. in terms of seeing it, it was, you know, it's that Mike Nichols quote of this is, you know, the elephant dancing on the head of a pin.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That was what that number was. And if that number wasn't working and didn't make you cry, I'll probably cry talking about it. Like it's not going to work.
Right.
So there was the big exuberant Don't Stop Believin', and then there was the middle of the road one, and then there was the one where I think it was like, you know, Moominshance, where it was like Blue Man. I don't know what you were doing. And I just remember we have to distill this down to make it feel like relatable kids
yes.
who don't know what they're doing, but it's kind of good.
Yes.
And it's just like this, you know, I remember the moments in shooting that number where some things would matter to me more than other things. I wasn't so much interested in some of the steps as I was interested in Jenna, like how you would fling your hair around mm. or Leah would like do that or mm-hmm. like what that meant, like youth,
yes.
the exuberant of being free in a space.
Mm.
You're free on that stage. You're not free in the hallway. So you can fling your body around. I remember being so moved by mm. your hair acting, like things like that, that hit. And then we did an episode based on that, my bursting into tears at the youthfulness of hair being flung. But it was like, it was just, it was such a great, we worked really hard on it.
Yeah.
And we were given the time
yes.
to rehearse and to work things out. And for me to say, yes, no,
right.
more of that.
Right.
Do more of that.
Right.
I was obsessed with the way Amber would pat her leg at the beginning, like little moments that probably no one ever cared about. These were the things that I obsessed over because for me, they represented hope, mm. youth, freedom, safety.
Mm.
I remember when I was in drama club, it was the only place in the world where I felt that I could be me and not be judged. So I was looking for things like that. And mm. and those were powerful, moving things that, and I also have this rule in my career where, which I learned from Glee, which is the more specific something is, the more universal it becomes.
Mm.
So we're making, like, no one thought a show about a show choir would ever work. But the reason it did is because everybody knows what it's like to be misunderstood, unseen, and bullied.
Yeah.
Everybody. And that is the thing that people glommed onto. And I've never forgot it. I've never forgot the shooting of that episode and the specificity. And I kept... you know, I don't know how many takes we would do, sometimes 15.
Oh my
and
God.
Also, I will be honest, like, it was so, sometimes you guys would be doing numbers. You have to remember that we built that auditorium on stage, right?
Yeah,
and we
two.
Would be doing, and I'll, like, for example, when we were doing the treble tones mashup of the Adele songs,
mm-hmm.
Rumor Has It, and...
The Best.
What was the other song, Jenna? What was that song?
Someone
Like You. That was a moment where you guys were just doing it and Adele was, you know, Adele. And that was a day where I think I said, we're going to shoot the whole day this number. That's what all we're doing. And everyone on the lot from all of these different departments at Fox, we just came and we sat in the audience and it was so magical that
yep.
I think you guys maybe had to run it like 15 times before we kicked people out.
Yeah.
People would, you got standing ovations in the rehearsal, I remember.
Yep.
Like it was just moving to see young people performing at that level and being able to be creative in the lighting. It was just kind of nutty and magical. But that's what I remember, the joy of seeing you guys kill it. And also, like, when we did Wheels, that episode in the first season, that number, all of you in the wheelchairs, again, probably not something we could do today. But I remember thinking...
I enjoyed it, though. I enjoyed shooting that.
Yeah. And I remember Paris and I sitting in that, the director, sitting in the auditorium, just marveling, like, I can't believe, like, that these kids get to sing this song and talk about... you know, disabilities in this way. And it sometimes you just felt like you were outside watching it, like you couldn't believe what we were getting away with, and like, okay,
totally.
But I knew when we were doing it, the reaction that the audience would feel that way, and they did. Maybe not too Gangnam style, but
I think we felt that within it too, though, even doing it, especially those first 13, where, like you said, we had the time and had the care. Like, even when we would go into the recording studio later on, we'd have to record a song basically in 30 minutes. But we had half a day to figure out with Adam Anders, like, what are the three parts going to sound like in primary?
Right.
We didn't know because our voices are so different. We were still figuring all that out. And there was so much excitement from every department to figure it out and make it all work together.
Right.
Yeah. And having, you know, people who were designing the sets come out and finally see, like, what it looked like as everyone's performing, as Andrew Mitchell was shooting it, you know, with these beautiful Steadicam shots, and seeing the joy it brought so many different people for so many different reasons, and it just magically working over and over again. Like, I remember Don't Stop, which was maybe this one of the simplest numbers we've ever done.
Oh, it took.
I think we shot that for a day and a half.
2 days, yeah.
Yes.
We did like 70 something takes. Yes. And you watch it, you're like, well, this is very simple. But had you not taken the care, that's
our first
the tone
music,
for
like
everything.
Big musical number we had done like that.
And also, like, directing a musical, do you know how hard it is to get a light flare to go off at the exact moment Lea Michele puts her head? It was hard. Like, we had never done anything like that.
Right.
So we had the space to be like, and I just kept saying, that's not it. That's not it. That's not it. That's it. And then that took a while. But I just, it was like, one of my favorite moments in the show was when we were doing the vitamin D number. And, you know, the story of the vitamin D number was because at that point, you know, we were in the middle of shooting it and I was so tired. And we noticed that whenever I took a Claritin D for my allergies, suddenly we had the energy to continue on with the screenwriting.
I took one today.
But I remember the day that we were doing, I didn't like the boys part of it. I'm sorry, Kevin. But I was obsessed with the Halo Walking on Sunshine part of it.
Yep.
I remember thinking, like, how are these girls going to do this number? Because I had not seen the rehearsal. And so just good. How insane you guys were and how much fun you had. That was another day where we just sat there and laughed and watched it all day.
There were
so many times where even if we weren't in the scenes, we would all just go watch each other's numbers. Yes. We were so impressed.
There were days where you guys would not be filming and you would come in to watch the other cast members perform just to sit there and see, like, well, what are they going to do?
Yeah. Do you know how often I'd sit in that choir room and be like, I'm getting paid to sit here and watch these people get up here and perform their asses off.
Yes.
It's like cathartic, to release
and respond to it
at that, like, level, you know?
I was like, you guys are so talented. And, like, you would have ideas that would push us.
Right.
Like, you would have me doing songs I never would have picked for myself. Or given Amber never used to, like, do the, like, yell singing, sort of like, ah! She's like, I had never done that before. Like,
pretty
and now,
choir
can you
girl.
Imagine hearing her not do that?
Right.
Where
right.
we were all pushed to challenge ourselves. And then I think you also saw that and then started to sort of implement some of those changes into the characters, like from our real lives. And that felt sometimes it was great. Sometimes we're like, this seems oddly
familiar.
Similar. Yeah, like, what is this? But it all came from us being able to just push ourselves. And like,
those first 13, even into year one and two, like, I remember that I would never ever do anything on Friday nights because most of the time we would be shooting in that choir room until 4 in the morning on a Friday night.
In Cabrillo.
And it was, you know, we would all sit around in a huddle in our crappy director's chairs and that have given me years of back problems. And we would just like shoot the shit and talk and like make jokes. And a lot of the things that we would write would come from those moments of like, wait a minute, why are Naya and Amber singing The Boy Is Mine? Well, we got to put that in an episode.
Right.
Like it was like
Heather, like Brittany's whole character was based off of.
Yeah.
The dolphin.
yeah, like moments just hanging out. And those were good times.
They were. Hi, it's Bethany Frankel. My time on The Real Housewives of New York is a few years behind me. And now I'm ready to put the real back into The Real Housewives. That's where my new podcast, Rewives, comes in. This isn't your typical rewatch podcast. I'm watching only the most iconic episodes from all cities. I'm sharing never-before-heard stories of what happened behind the scenes. And I'm not just pulling in cast members for post-game analysis. I'm doing something a little more interesting. If you've ever seen an episode of The Real Housewives, you know the drill. But beyond throwing drinks and legs, there are lessons about marriage, divorce, friendship, money, parenting, and fame. If you have the right minds, analyze and dig deeper. So I'm bringing on unexpected thought leaders and celebrities to give their take on the chaos. This season, I sit down with Elizabeth Moss, Kevin Nealon, Susie Orman, Griffin Johnson, and more. You'd think that there isn't much to learn from flipping tables and yanking wigs, but that's where you're wrong. Listen to Rewives with Bethany Frankel on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Ryan,
let's talk about something we can all relate to. Hair removal. Not exactly the highlight of our day, right? Between Nick's cuts and razor burn, the worst. But guess what? Nair, the OG, has taken hair removal to the next level with their new sensational shower and body creams that smell amazing. Literally the best thing ever. Nair's new scents have turned my bathroom into a spa. My favorite is the soothing aloe and water lily body cream. It smells so good. Plus, it's designed for lingering freshness, so I smell and feel good for the rest of the day. And who doesn't love that? Nair's new shower and body creams are super easy to apply and work in as little as 3 minutes, and my smooth skin lasts days longer than shaving. You can use it on your legs, arms, underarms, even your bikini area, which is perfect with summer right around the corner. I just went on a trip to New York to visit my family, and I used Nair before I left. I didn't even need to pack a razor because I knew my legs would be smooth the entire trip. So check out the new and improved body creams and shower creams from Nair, the number one hair removal brand. So smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This show has had so much impact on like everybody, right, around the world. But, you know, we talk about us in the bubble and you, like, there's so much media out there. They raises us up, brings us down. But like, what do you want this show to leave? And how do you want it to imprint on people, on you, on us? Like, what is it that you want this show's legacy to be?
You know, I for me personally, right, it I said this at the Corey's memorial service, where I said, you know, Glee was the best of times and it was the worst of times in all of our lives. I think that's true because of the tragedies, because of things. But also, the thing that I have learned the older I get is lean into the best of times. And I look at that show and what it did, and how we don't remember, but I'd remember, because I force myself sometimes to go back. That first season when Glee came on, I think attendance and show choirs leapt something like 300% in this country. There was some article, I remember cutting it out and showing it to you back when there was newspapers. I remember things like that. The legacy of a love for music, a legacy of looking at social issues. So many episodes that we did that were very heavy and were really about something that young kids, I think the legacy of examining, you know, high school bullying was a big thing. Coming out was a big thing. Drug addiction was a big thing. There were just so many things that we covered to me that were important. But the legacy that I want to last, which I think is lasting, is this show celebrates music of all kinds, and it is a love letter to musical artists and to misfits in high school who can express what they're feeling from song. And that was the conceit, that you would just be walking down the hallway and you'd burst into song. But that's kind of what life has always felt to me like. Mm. I just care now about, you know, young kids watching the show who can feel... The thing I'm embarrassed about myself is the very thing I should be celebrating. That to me is what this show was about and will always be about. And I'm at the phase now with that show, you know, where it's like, well, there's been enough time. Like, maybe we should really re-examine it as a brand. You know, should we do a reboot of it in some way? Should we do a Broadway musical of it in some way? Like, it's sort of like an interesting legacy that I'm interested in doing in a positive way after sort of pausing for a while. Yeah. But I don't know. I just love what it says and what it did. And there will never be in my life another Glee, anything close to it in terms of me feeling so close to it. And the feeling that I really did have when I made it, which was just pure love and feeling that I, as a misunderstood, unloved kid, had a moment where maybe I was understood. Mm-hmm. That's what it means to me. It's very much that show about how I felt as a kid and how I wish I had a friend like that show. Mm. Like, if that show had aired when I was a kid, it would have been my friend. And I find that really moving. And I find it so important that so many young kids do see that show as that. And that's what I love about it. And that's what I'll always love about it. And well, that's what I think we all tried to do with it. Are we all crying now? I see tears.
It's like, it's beautiful. I mean, that's how it feels for me. And I think, I don't speak for Jenna, but it brought us all together. It made us, it was, you know, meta in that way where, yeah, we were playing characters, but we were those kids. And we did get brought together and did get to have this incredible, wild experience where we felt appreciated and that we belonged. Mm-hmm. And how around the world people got to connect with that, connect with us, connect with you. And it's incredible that anything can last that long and still have that that much meaning. And so it's incredible to, you know, be a part of something that has and still does mean that much to people.
Yeah, it's sweet. It's I look at it in just such a different light. Like, it's the thing that never should have worked that worked. And it worked just because of the group of people who made it and how much we all believed in it. Mm-hmm. And we had no idea. And like, I've never had that feeling again of let's roll up our, literally like that. That's the reason why you go into show business. First of all, anybody in show business is in show business because you are unloved. That's just the truth. And you go into that to try and get this universal feeling of acceptance and love and that you're missing, which show business and success gives you, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I've learned from my decades of therapy. Mm-hmm. But, I just feel like it was such a wonderful time, and I'm glad that we get to, you know, have conversations like this where we're able to look back on it in a fond way.
Yes.
Like, we're not in the pressure cooker of making it. And when you're in the pressure cooker, it's hard. But now we're like old enough, and we have enough distance that I hope everybody who did it could see that it really was made with pure love and a great intent.
Yes.
But I'm just curious, do you guys have any, because I'll never talk about this again, do you have any undying questions you've always wanted to ask me about the show? Because I feel like there has to be something we didn't talk about. Or have we talked about everything?
I have something dark I was going to ask about. Like, we were talking about Corey, and we were talking about, but I don't think we ever got to talk about like the decision and the conflict of like actually making the quarterback.
Right.
Mm.
Like, we obviously were we were contracted, and we were going to make it whether we wanted to or not, right? Like, we were a part of that. But
we were given the option to not do it, but I think I remember Ryan or somebody saying, like, you don't have to do this, but it felt like, I feel like everyone's going to do it. I don't want to be the one person who's not a part of it.
And then I think a part of it was, like, we did it for Corey in some way. In hopes that we would get some sort of closure with it in some weird way. So I'm just curious, like, we never really got to hear about your guys' side of that decision to, like,
actually do it.
Yeah. And make that decision, like, how Finn was going to exit the show.
That's a really good question, because I've thought a lot about that recently, and I would not have done that show now. I just would not have done it. I would never have. I felt like it was way too raw and way too soon. But this is what happened. So Corey died, and the months leading up to that were very fraught and emotional and difficult to love someone, and I had no idea that he had a drug problem. I was naive. I didn't know. And then, you know, I was the person who had to lead the intervention, not knowing what to do or what to say. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just like desperate for him to live.
Right.
You know, and it was, again, I had no training for that. So when he passed, you know, there was a decision that we had to make about, do we cancel the show or do we go on? And it was a difficult decision. And I had a conversation with Leah about it, because she was dating Corey and was very, you know, involved in the thing. And it was like, well, what do you want to do? And it was a big corporate decision. And there was a decision after a couple of weeks of, well, there's a crew here that's been with us from day one. There are many jobs on the line. The show was still doing well. Do you keep it going or do you cancel it? Of course, there's no right answer. And I didn't really know what to do, so I just sort of, I remember after many conversations from a lot of people weighing in, we made the decision to, well, let's keep it going. And if you're going to keep it going and keep these jobs going, how do you address what happened? Because the male lead of the show, you know, died, so what do you do? Do you just pretend it didn't happen? You can't do that. Did he die off camera? That didn't feel right to me. And I just think that with a lot of conversations, we decided to pay tribute to him.
Yeah.
And it was something that I remember even then thinking, okay, well, if we're going to do this, people are going to have a lot of feelings. And I don't even remember. I was in such a blur of grief, to be honest, and so devastated by his death that, you know, I don't know if I told you guys the story, but, you know, I helped him in his intervention and he seemed to have gotten through it in a good way. And then I went off to make The Normal Heart, and I was always talking to him every day, and he came to the set of The Normal Heart to be with me, and he was like my child. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, thank God he made it. Thank God he's going to be okay. He came to Fire Island and he spent time with me. And I remember thinking like, against all odds, he's going to be okay. And then 2 days later, 3 days later, he died. So it was very unexpected. And anyway, so we decided to do the tribute episode. And I remember that the one thing that I asked for was that there was a grief counselor on set who at any moment could, you know, people weren't really doing that back then, to my knowledge. But I also remember that not one single person talked to that grief counselor.
No.
Nobody was interested in really sharing it. And I think that it's an episode I was able to watch once and edit, never looked at it again.
Yeah.
I probably think that it was not right to... Again, it was complicated because, as I recall it, everybody had the choice. Do you want to sing? Do you not want to do this? Do you want to be in it? Do you not want to be in it? If you don't want to be in it, I will understand.
It just felt like an impossible corner we were all put in, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
there's no right or wrong. There's no... It just felt like... And it's a blur to me, too. Like, I don't remember being given the option, which now, like... I remember briefly, but like it just was one of those things that, like, I think the grief counselor was like, it was just a sign that it was all too soon, too raw. Like, nobody was ready to talk about it, right? Like, nobody was in the place to.
And also, like, we were all very, very protective of each other. Like, we were all very close on all levels. And it felt like that we were having to sort of. I had never lost anyone before that I was that close with, and I didn't know how to personally deal with it other than, like, being around all of you guys and being able to, like, talk about it, and because I knew everybody felt the same. And so having, you know, we're in a scene talking about a character. Obviously, we're talking about our real friend, and then there's a camera on you, and it's like when those things happen, like, you don't know when you're going to lose it and not lose it and break down. And I remember the camera turned on me and I just got up out of the wheelchair and walked out of the scene. And I was just outside the stage just like losing it and crying. And I was like, what is happening? Like, what is going on? Because the separation, and I've watched other shows do it too since, just to see. And it is that, you know, there's no correct answer. There's no right way to do it. And I just remember feeling like our little group here is being exposed in a way where by that point too, you know, we were constantly in the press, where it's like I just wanted to I think get even closer and protect ourselves, and it felt like we were sort of opening the thing to the public. And there was also a thing I remember when we had to go to the Teen Choice Awards and accept an award, and they wanted us to speak about Corey, and there's all this weird stuff like what is happening, where you are still managing a brand and a job, but also at the core of it, it's like, okay, one of our closest friends is gone. And like, and we also, we didn't know what to do. We had never been in this very peculiar, specific situation.
Well, what do you guys, you know, what do you think we should have done?
That's the thing. I don't know. Because creatively, I don't know how you get around it unless you do address it.
And it also feels like an elephant in the room if you don't address it, right?
Yeah, it was very, very difficult.
Yeah,
and
probably that one of the hardest things ever.
Yeah. If I could do it all over again, I think knowing now what I do know, I probably would have said, you know what, we're going to take a year off, and then we're going to check in and see how does everybody, even 6 months.
Right.
I remember that everybody had time off after he died. I remember we kept moving the shooting date. You know, the world was a different place then again. It was such a, and everybody who were, you know, our bosses had great empathy.
Yes.
None of us knew what to do, but none of us knew how to handle it. None of us knew how to pay tribute to him. None of us knew what to do with the business.
Right.
But all of us did know that when that happened, I think our hearts all kind of broke and we were kind of done.
Yes.
Even though we were like, okay, well
there it goes.
There, it's gone. The spirit of joy of it has left the building.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can keep things going for financial reasons and to keep crew members being paid. And again, the crew that we had was several hundred people who were with us from the beginning who did depend on those paychecks. So that was a big thing to be thinking about. But
right.
I wasn't thrilled with how it was. It just, I didn't know what to do. Nobody did. And I think we did the best with what we could, but it was very dark. And you were right to say, like, let's talk about that because none of us have really talked about it. Mm-hmm. Like,
I blocked it out of my memory.
I do remember talking to everybody and saying, do you want to sing a song or not? Or what do you want to do? Like, I remember Leah was very unsure, and that was her idea to sing that song. And it was like, are you sure? Okay. Oof. Like, I don't remember.
Right.
I remember everything being very tender and tentative and not knowing where to move. But if I had to do it again, we would have stopped for a long time.
Yeah.
And,
different world, right?
Probably not come back. I don't think we would have come back.
Yeah.
Now, if this had happened, I would be like, that's the end, because you can't really recover from something like that. And also, it wasn't like a normal death where someone was sick and you can see them. It happened so quickly with no warning. And we thought things had been, first of all, we had no idea. And then it was sort of dealing with the crisis and
And he's young.
Not a fun time.
We just have such a young cast to lose so many people that it feels so, I don't know, a bit much bigger and more tragic. Because it's these people who haven't lived out their time, right? Or haven't had the full experience, their full time spent here. So
yeah, and that's, again, to be blunt, I think that's part of the reason why none of us have wanted to do anything else with the show, because of respect
for
the people who have passed and like, okay, well, maybe it's fine as it is, and if you bring it up again, it maybe it's not
right.
healthy to examine these emotions and feelings, but maybe it is. I don't know the answer. I just know that whenever we talk about it with things like this, like, I'm sure you guys have no idea that there were all of these conversations like about should we or shouldn't we.
No,
you just thought
not.
Like, no. Okay, this is what we're doing.
You
did not get to see the parent
exactly
crying in the room on his knees sobbing saying I can't go on. You didn't see dad do that. You just saw, okay, here's trying to be a leader, numb.
Yes, trying to be stoic in front of us, keep it together.
And in some ways, we all just wanted to be together. So what other way but to come and do the show and be together and heal together, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And I remember talking to, I remember Telly was in the writer's building, and he was just like, it's really hard to even just be on the lot every day. Even to just be in the same places where we were with him every single day, where no matter where we went, it was just a constant
reminder.
Yeah. I think you're probably right in the decision probably to have, if it happened today, that you would just.
Yeah. It's a no brainer, right? Like in hindsight, but like, you know, again, we live in a different world. That's why like these new eyes of like watching the show and looking at the show as adults and, you know, with all this time, you know, and space between it, like it's a different beast now. And like, we look back so much more fondly than the anger and the pain that, you know, kind of was overshadowed a lot of it for a long time.
I also think, cause a lot of the bad stuff happened towards the end. And so that's the most recent memory.
What are you, I'm interested in that. Like, what do you define the bad stuff?
Well,
Corey's
death. Corey, I think, you know, the mark of it all, Naya, And so like the things that happened more recently were losing people we were close with. And then I think there were other things that happened towards the end of the show, behavioral things that.
Well, and also the core cast that we that grew into this thing, you know, like everybody separated. Like we didn't see half of our friends. They went off to New York and half the show was split into two different shows. And so it felt like our whole family went, you know, away. And you're like,
there was a divorce.
I'm, you know, Kevin and I are still in the choir room and we're like, what's going over, you know, happening in New York? And you're hearing of all these things and, you know, the media wheel is going and the gossip wheel is going. And it just felt like everybody took the show and ran with it versus like the bubble that we were able to experience and the love that we were able to experience in the pilot and in that short, you know, in those first couple of years.
Yeah, of course, that's the dilemma when you do a high school show, right? It's like, okay, well, they have to graduate and they have to. And of course, when you're, I remember hating that idea. It's like, I don't want to leave this choir room. I'm not interested in going to New York. I don't care about that. I only cared about those kids in that room. And that was a creative decision that maybe I should have addressed in the writing. Like, I don't know, maybe we had done four seasons and like one of them was like an acid trip and then you got to repeat your senior year or something. So the all of you, and then it should probably have ended once we left that choir room. And I think that you learn, like, you know, you learn that when you're doing a high school show. Other people have struggled with that too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there are shows on now that they just replace entire casts every two seasons. It's just like, and here are the new people.
Yeah.
But also, our show like, was about the characters. You don't want to leave them.
I think we live in a world now with television particularly where the appetite for a hit show is probably three seasons. That seems to be the streaming model, and there's a reason for that. And I wish...
Yeah.
But also, we did some great things in those last two seasons that were phenomenal and musical numbers that were great. And so I wouldn't change anything, but I do have regrets. You know, I think what I wish I had really done is to have more... You know, in talking about it with you guys, I wish that we had had more sort of state of the unions meetings where you were allowed and I was allowed to sit with you guys and say, okay, this is where I am. What do you want to know? Like, because I would have told you.
Right.
It was just like we were always in different places and running around and just trying to keep up.
Yeah.
I just remember that feeling like I'm trying not to drown. I am paddling as fast as I can. I did not have the resources or the training or the skills to really do it or know what I was doing, and I was faking it till I made it. Of course, now I would be able to handle it in a completely different way and many relationships in a very different way. And I wish I had, but
you're able to do that now, and you're able to be a parent, like a more well-rounded human probably because you did go through all of these things.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to come back on your podcast and really go through some of these later episodes that I did direct and tell you, like, because I like talking about the joy of it. Like, I've enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, you tell us when.
Come back.
Like, I really want to talk about, well, this is the pilot, but, I mean, there's so many great, I mean, episodes. Like, have me back because I want to talk, like, I love talking about...
Madonna.
Well, the Madonna one, we can talk about that right now. But like, yes, like, I mean, there's so many. I will come back for Madonna, but I want to, like, even talking with you guys about the joy of the Adele mashup or the Vitamin D number or Don't Stop Believing. Just sitting here talking about, God, we had so much fun. We were all just fans. Like, we were fans.
Totally.
And Amber Riley is the one who first turned me on to Adele.
Wow.
She was the one who said, have you heard this singer? Kevin, I think you were the first person who told me about Lady Gaga because you guys were on some show with her. And I'm like, who's Lady Gaga?
Oh, yeah. We did an MTV appearance.
And all of, so these were just like creative moments where we're like, I love this person. Listen to this or check out this or remember this. And then, you know, it was my job to inform you guys of ancient Barbara Streisand songs.
I knew none of the musical theater.
I knew that.
I know.
I didn't know any musical theater. Are you kidding? I remember, I've told the story a billion times, but I don't know if you knew this, Ryan, that when Kristen Chenoweth was doing Maybe This Time, during between one of the setups, I was walking around the halls with her. I was like, I had never heard this song before. You sound great.
You never heard the Liza version, right? Right. Yeah. Little Kevin.
No idea. I was like, I come from pop R&B music.
We fixed that. We fixed
it. But you cannot imagine how heretical and bizarre it was to be doing a Candoran Ebb song on a mainstream network television show. Like, that's just so weird. And we did that.
We got to sing and dance on TV. It was like a dream come true. You know, it's like everything. You either have to choose between TV or Broadway, right? Like that's
my whole life. People were like, "Oh, you have to choose one, acting or singing." Right. I'm like, "No, I can't."
Right.
And then here we are. This happened. Yeah.
Please come back, Ryan.
I'm coming back for Madonna. So yes. Like, what was that episode 15 or 16 of season one? Tell me, guys, how you guys are going to do this show? Because I love when you guys talk about Glee, and I have we've had conversations, but I've never let anybody else do anything like this except for you two, because I do believe that you have a love of the show.
We do.
And that you believe in the message of the show, and I trust you implicitly. So tell me, like, how are you going to do this show that I think people are going to really enjoy? Do you do an episode
a week?
One episode a week. Okay.
Yep. And we'll go through the episodes, and then we're going to obviously go through the actual narrative of the episode, go through the characters and all that, tell our
half hour
stories, like, memories.
Right.
And then there's sort of all the other fun things that we can add in, you know, addressing some of the crazy, like, TikTok rumors and things that dispel some of those sort of things.
Wait, tell me about those. What are those?
Oh my God, it's crazy. Kevin, don't ever go on TikTok.
What's a TikTok rumor?
So this is, I think, what started the Glee resurgence during the pandemic was TikTok.
Okay.
There's Glee Talk, because the algorithm can get so specific that people started sharing all of, like, their favorite or most hated or wildest conspiracies about the show. But also, like, Glee is still being talked about in 2022, as you know. And so, like, let's talk about what people are talking about the show currently.
Yeah.
And address some of those things.
I mean, we also wanted to, like, bring on some of the actual artists that we covered this time around.
Like, I'd love to know Steve Perry's, you know, view of how version of Don't Stop, you know, how that affected his career, if at all. And like,
he was the first one when I was on my bender about, I have to get this song. He was supportive from the get-go.
Wow.
And I remember he came to set.
Yeah, I remember meeting
him. He was very lovely and just got it and got, and I think I had a very brief conversation with him about, I'm interested in this song because of X.
And we may have questions for you, too.
I should have a segment on your show called True or False, where you just ask me questions and I'm only allowed to say true or false.
Great.
Okay, great.
Let us stew on it and come up with some really good ones.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm elderly now, but I do have a 9-year-old who I let watch TikTok sometimes, and he's always saying, like, your show is really popular on here. Right. I'm like, what do you? And then I try and research it, and I can never find anything. I have fallen into the YouTube. There are all of these compilation things where it'll be like, you know, Sue Sylvester's greatest moments, or 100 of the most insane things that they actually put on Glee. And I'm like, oh my God, how did we do that?
Right.
Mr. Shoe's creepiest moments.
Yes. Love it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Things that age well, things that didn't age well.
Things that
Glee predicting the future.
Yes, Glee predicting the future is a big thing.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so we'll talk about stuff like that,
okay,
too.
Okay, well, I'll come in and do a true and false segment.
Okay, we're going to add that in. We're going to add that in. Ryan, you're the best. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for seriously all of it. Thank you.
I think we should also have a segment called We Did This Right, and I think we should have a segment called We Really F***ed This Up.
Great. Yeah, I think that's right.
There were some things, you know, that you don't know, that you're just trying to, the churn of it, you know, mistakes were made, but a lot of things we did right. So
We did.
Love you guys. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you for doing
this. Love you.
Okay.
All right, see you soon.
Bye.
What a conversation with Lady Ryan Murphy. It's truly incredible. We're just so grateful to him. And we can't wait to recap the pilot with you guys next week. We're going to go back and chat about what really happened. That's what you really missed in the pilot. And so make sure you go watch that this week and join us next week. And follow us on Instagram at And That's What You Really Missed Pod. Follow Kevin. Follow me for all of the Glee Insider tips. Are we trading?
We're trading tips.
We're trading tips. Trading stocks. Trading right. tips.
Thank you so much for your support these first 2 weeks. Please.
Yeah.
Also, let us know who you want us to have on the pod. And we'll do our best to try to get all our friends and fans to come on and talk about this show. So, see you next week. Thank you for being here.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.